Funding for the connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. In Washington's restoration drama, all the parts are pretty well cast. The W administration is a retread revival of Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Bush apparatchiks. All the power triangles emerging seem to have Dick Cheney presiding as a kind of prime minister. There's the one at Foggy Bottom in the Pentagon with Rummy Rumsfeld and Colin Powell. There's the White House power trio of Chief of Staff Andrew Card, Senior Advisor Karl Rove, Counselor Karen Hughes, and don't forget the troubled troika of Attorney General Designate John Ashcroft, Interior Secretary Gail Norton, and Labor Secretary Linda Chavez. The pundits are already assigning Bork ratings for the confirmation battles ahead. The new Republicans have arrived. Connection listeners, what happens when compassion finally trips up on conservatism? Is this where Eisenhower's party of the 50s meets the bridge to the 21st century? Our phone is 1-800-423-8255 to make the Bush restoration connection. 1-800-423-TALK or join us online at theconnection.org. Joining us first this hour is William Crystal, who edits the Weekly Standard magazine, and Arianna Huffington, syndicated columnist, author most recently of the book How to Overthrow the Government. You guys represent sort of the, should we say, the old new Republicans. Give us your sketch of sort of where this Bush, the W theme comes down, Bill Crystal. What's this about?
Yeah, I like the idea of representing the old new Republicans, or maybe the new old new Republicans. It's
something
kind of confusing over the last few years. I think we don't know where it comes down. It's a mix. There are some people I have a high regard for in this administration. There are others, you know, who are kind of ordinary, competent appointments. Bush himself is a bit of a, obviously, a blank slate. And, you know, it could be a better administration than people like me who weren't big Bush fans in the primaries expected, or it could be a very ordinary corporatist Republican administration, or it could be a pretty bad and failed administration. I think it's awfully hard to say. I would say I think it's a little unfair, all the restoration talk. The truth is, I mean, someone like Rumsfeld is a serious guy. It shouldn't be held against him that he served in previous Republican administrations. Cheney is a serious guy. Mitch Daniels at OMB, Tommy Thompson at HHS, at Health and Human Services, those two will probably be the key players in domestic policy. And they're both pretty imaginative and pretty interesting figures who are interested, I think, in a reform agenda and social policy. So I'm more optimistic, I would say, than I was a month ago.
You raise a question about George W. Bush himself. I mean, the question about the triangles is, you know, is he involved in those triangles himself?
You know,
does he have a chair?
You'd have to be a fly on the wall. He seems to be. I would say this. Look, if you just look at the last few weeks and judge by results, he has been shrewder than I think most people expected. As some of these appointments are a little imaginative. Someone like Gail Norton, who's been, I think, unfairly attacked in the press. I know her some. She's, in fact, a pretty creative thinker and a successful attorney general in Colorado, a new generation. You know, it's not her fault she worked for Jim Watt for a year or two. In fact, she's done a pretty good job in Colorado in balancing environmental policy with development and looking at innovative ways to give people private rights that encourage environmental protection. So I think he's been pretty shrewd over the last few weeks.
Arianna Huffington, is there a... Can you imagine, anticipate a theme, a symbol, a sort of a cultural statement coming out of this assembly of talent?
Well, I would say that it's really the restoration versus the reformation, because they keep the defining battle is going to be what is George W. going to do with John McCain? And when John McCain introduces his McCain-Feingold bill, which he intends to do, he says, right at the beginning of the legislative session, how is W going to handle it? If it is true, as it appears, that he does have his 60-vote filibuster-proof majority that he needs, it means that W will have to decide right at the beginning of this administration whether to veto that bill and clearly define himself as not a reformer with results, which was the name his team gave him after the McCain-New Hampshire victory. And so at that time, we're going to see that this team, which looks pretty solid, is actually not of our time, because the key issue of our time is cleaning up the system, which even people who don't want to clean it up the way McCain wants to clean it up, starting with eliminating soft money, realize is pretty decadent and has really affected every aspect of our politics.
That's interesting that you should say they're not of our time. Presidents tend to become sort of the definition of our time, willy-nilly. Can you imagine the sort of the culture, given also the strangeness of the election process, can you imagine this sort of not of our time verdict holding, a kind of rejection of this of a foreign body here?
Well, there is an enormous amount of resentment to this administration among young people, among African Americans, among other minorities. And the question is, how organized is that resentment going to be? And it's actually coupled with resentment towards a lot of the failed policies of the Clinton administration, especially when it comes to criminal justice issues and the huge numbers of those incarcerated for nonviolent drug abuses. What is interesting is that the one cabinet-level appointment that W has not filled is the drug czar. And I think that's going to be a very key appointment. McCaffrey has gone. Can't you feel the void? He's no longer with us as of Friday. And is Bush going to appoint another clueless general to take us further into Colombia and ignore those who need treatment at home? Or is he going to follow a different model? A lot of the young people, a lot of the people who are the ones who organize and protest are particularly agitated about that issue.
Bill Kristol, I wonder where you think that reformist energy in the Republican Party has gone. I mean, like him or not, and you loved him, Newt Gingrich had a kind of reform, think anew, get rid of the old guys' energy about him. Certainly John McCain did. How much of that it survives in this Bush gang?
Well, I think Arianna's right. That's the question. And the first test probably is campaign finance reform, where I think it's very much in Bush's interest to work out a deal with McCain to come up with a – I mean, I'm for campaign reform. I'm not crazy about McCain-Feingold, and there are changes I'd like to see made in it, and I think a lot of conservatives could sign on to campaign reform if those changes were made. I think it's an early test for Bush whether he's willing to work with McCain and end up signing a bill. If he has to veto it, I suppose he will, but that's not a good way to start off, obviously. You know, he's got a lot of delicate things ahead, and it's tough to govern, obviously, in this circumstance. It's really uncharted waters, too. I'm really struck by that. If you look at the 2000 election, it's such a, you know, Clinton is a spent force, Gingrich is a spent force. All the things we argued about in the 90s seem to have faded away. It was a very bizarre election in 2000 when you think about it. The two most prominent politicians in the 90s clearly were Clinton and Gingrich. Very impressive figures, each in their own way. Very flawed figures, each in their own way. The Gore ran away from Clinton. Bush ran away from Gingrich. You had a very uninspiring, I think it's safe to say, campaign, pretty conventional campaign. Each side mobilized its voters, dead heat, basically. And now Bush has to govern. And I think it's one of those circumstances you just don't know what's going to happen. It could easily be a flop. He could easily get chewed up by the economy and by foreign policy crises and by the Democrats. Or he could be a success. If you look back at 1960, you know, Kennedy ran an uninspiring campaign. He was considered a very cautious, conventional Democrat, kind of got the job, was able to get the nomination because of his father's wealth and prominence, beat, you know, Stevenson, who was the favorite of the intellectuals, Humphrey, who was the favorite of the liberals, Lyndon Johnson, who was the favorite of actually the, you know, the kind of heavyweight insiders, barely beat Nixon, stalemate in Congress for the first year or two. But things happened in the 60s that no one would have expected in 1960. I guess my one instinct about the current situation is things are going to happen over the next 2, 4, 6 years that we very much don't expect now. It is like the 1960, I think, in that respect, or 1961, I guess, since we're now in the new year. And very unpredictable, though, what they are or whether, you know, they go in a conservative direction or a liberal direction or whether that dispute even means anything anymore. It's a very unusual time, I think, in that respect.
I didn't think I was that much older than you, but I remember those times very differently. There was a tangible excitement about the Kennedy start, the Kennedy 100 days, and there was candle power around him for bad things, it turned out, in many cases,
that
was incomparable. I want to go back. I mean, the other thing that's brand new here, well, say it wasn't here 6 months ago, is a sense of, I mean, he talked nosedive about this economy. People are really not only at the edge of panic about the bubble in the market, but they're also deep in a debate here with Alan Greenspan about tax cuts and interest rates as the way out. Give us just a sort of handle on that. I mean, this is the first big fight of the administration, seems to me, before they take office, is who's running this economy.
Well, first of all, Chris, you know, it's really an incredible demonstration of the bankruptcy of political leadership in this country that this comes as a surprise to anybody that there is a downturn. I mean, all the economic signals were there. And yet the downturn, the impending downturn in the economy, was not at all part of the campaign. I mean, there wasn't a single question asked by Jim Blair at the debate, for example. As Gore and Bush were debating different ways to spend the surplus, he did not ask them once, what if there is no surplus? What if the economy really nosedives? And here you have Bush at the end of his economic forum saying, as though it was a new realization, that there are unprecedented levels of personal debt. I mean, people have been talking about that for 2 years, that bankruptcies are at record levels, that personal debt is at record levels. Just one of the indicators, together with energy prices, together with what's happening to housing, consumer
Arianna,
demand.
Stand by. Arianna Huffington and Bill Kristol are our guests. We're trying to get a handle on the Washington Bush restoration, the W formula. 1-800-423-8255. Joins the conversation at The Connection. Frank is on the line from Buffalo.
Hi, how is everybody doing today?
So far, so good, Frank.
Great. I had a question, and it was basically on the portrayal, Chris, that you did at the introduction about a renewal, a Republican renewal that you described as a little bit different from the past, sounding a little bit more progressive in some ways. And I guess the main point about it that I wanted the guests to comment on is it seems like the very divisive elements of the Republican Party, particularly social and religious conservatives, people like Pat Robertson, James Dobson, and folks like that, they're just as much there as they've always been, but they've just kind of been hidden in the background now, as we saw during the Republican convention. Those folks would normally have prominent speaking roles in Republican conventions, and they've been sort of hidden in the background, but they're frankly still there. And somebody like Pat Robertson, who's one of the most prominent racists on the American political scene, is just as much.
How do you know they're still there, Frank? How do you know they're still there?
Well, when I did see Pat Robertson doing spin on CNN for the Bush campaign, he would basically come on and comment on CNN and speak very openly as a supporter of Bush and talking about what he wanted for his constituency.
I want to ask Bill Kristol, it was in your magazine, Bill, that George Bush sort of first opened up about his own Christian conviction. How much of that converts to a conservative Christian agenda in public life, do you think? Or is that, has he dissolved it with his own personal piety here?
Well, I think they're two separate issues. There are plenty of pious Christians who aren't conservatives, obviously, and, I think they're very much different things. Bush is a, reasonably conservative on social issues, though obviously he doesn't want to pick fights on it and has gone out of his way not to pick fights, I would say. I think you've got a pretty balanced administration. You've got some social conservatives, you've got some social moderates. It'll be a test of Bush how he can balance those wings of the party. But, look, that's what every Republican administration is like, just like every Democratic administration has to balance the elements in their party.
I think there's a conservative guy who doesn't like culture wars.
In places like Cambridge and Boston about this, poor John Ashcroft is a religious man. He doesn't drink or smoke or dance. And you get your front page New York Times article yesterday that I would say is virtually anti-Christian bigotry. If it were written about an Orthodox Jew who doesn't pray with women, who doesn't dance with women, and who has all kinds of other restrictions, dietary and other restrictions, the whole establishment would be saying, a Jewish establishment, I'm Jewish, I can say this. I think we would say this is anti-Semitism.
Bill Kristol, we'll come back to it, including what the coverage of this thing begins to look like. We're talking about the W administration on The Connection. From Boston. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection. We're talking about the new Washington, where lawyers in general are out. Hollywood's history. Bimbos, of course, are banned. This is not back to the future, back to the past, back to an Eisenhower Republican standard that we knew in the first Bush administration, too. The phone's 1-800-423-8255. We're trying to get the feel of it with Arianna Huffington and Bill Kristol, who edits the Weekly Standard. Alexander Coburn will join us soon. Bill Kristol and Arianna, please decode this John Ashcroft fight, if you can. This seems to be the first Bork test. Ralph Neese, who beat Bork, is determined to stop John Ashcroft. What does it tell you?
Well, first of all, you know, my prediction is that they're not going to stop John Ashcroft. I mean, I've talked to a lot of Democratic senators who say that in the end the Senate clabbiness will prevail and they will vote their former colleague.
Didn't save John Tower.
Well, no, but John Tower had some special problems that had to do with alcohol and women, and I don't think, as we have been told, I don't think Ashcroft will have such problems. You know, I have a real problem with this. First of all, some of the statements that Ashcroft has made in the South Partisan Review, some of his pro-Confederacy statements are very, very troubling to me. Some of his statements, specifically the one that Tony Lewis had in his column on Saturday about the fact that he considers any money spent on treatment as opposed to interdiction in the drug war money that's wasted is very troubling. But to go from those troubling statements to say that he would not uphold the laws of the land when it comes to violence outside abortion clinics is a huge step that really there's no evidence for. On top of it, I worked with John Ashcroft in Washington when he was on the board of the Center for Effective Compassion that I had started, which was really intended to look at private sector solutions to social problems. He was very instrumental in the Republican Renewal Alliance in the Senate, which was really those senators who cared about social problems and wanted to put them on the front burner of the agenda. And he was really very genuinely interested in those issues. So for me, it's a very mixed picture and not at all the kind of picture that both his enemies and his friends have tried to portray.
Bill Kristol, who's going to fight hardest for John Ashcroft?
Well, certainly conservatives, and I assume Bush and the Bush administration will. I agree with Arianna. I think he'll make it. I think he will get 35 or 40 Democratic votes against. It was pretty clear yesterday that they've decided to go with the interest groups, and it's a safer vote if you're a Democrat with national ambitions to vote against Ashcroft than for. And Linda Chavez may be the one who's in the deepest trouble now because of this alleged, this illegal immigrant who stayed at her house. And
is this a nanny gate all over?
Yeah,
is it going to kill her?
Yeah, I mean, it's a heck of a way to, you know, pick and choose cabinet officers, but obviously if what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, I suppose. And I don't know what the facts are. We don't know yet. But if the facts aren't good for her, I suppose that combined with the opposition to her in other respects could hurt her. So I think Ashcroft ends up as attorney general, and, you know, I believe he'll enforce the law. The reason you can't ultimately make the case, I think, seriously against Ashcroft that he's somehow, won't enforce the law is that this man was attorney general of a state for 8 years. He was governor of a state for 8 years. He had 16 years of executive authority. And so far as I know, there were really no complaints that he was in any way, a scofflaw or not diligent about obeying the law.
But in the end, he was defeated for re-election. That's what
I'm saying. Sure, but lots of people defeated for re-election. And I think it's less the Senate club issue and more the fact that he's actually governed for 16 years that makes it hard to make the case that he's a sort of irresponsible extremist. One problem, the reason you can beat Linda Chavez, frankly, is that there's no proof, that she's never been elected to anything. She's never had really a major administrative job. So you can't sort of say, look, she would be responsible in office. So she's more vulnerable to these kinds of attacks, I think.
Bill Kristol, you mentioned what could be a kind of institutional hostility from the New York Times. I just wonder, it's always important in a new administration, sort of how the Post and the Times especially line up, and a few columnists. Who are going to be the friends and the voices of the young Bush administration? And who are going to be harassing him? Furthermore, who is going to sustain this question of his legitimacy, or who's going to give it a pass?
I think that's a good question, and I'll go first and let Arianna go, and then I guess I have to bug off here. But the obviously his friends will be the more conservative and pro-Republican papers and columnists and talk radio types, not you, but Rush Limbaugh, your counterpart there, and others like that.
Wow.
The critics will be the obvious ones. Will be the obvious ones too. I think
we call this the Rush Limbaugh for grown-ups program.
You do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, some kinds of grown-ups. He might have a quarrel about who the grown-ups are and who are the kids. I think an interesting question is, Well, there are many interesting questions. I don't know. I mean, look, he will have, can he keep the support? There are lots of columnists who try to say the truth as they see it. I think there's a reformist streak in conservatism that I hope I've tried to elaborate. Arianna certainly has in a slightly different way. And, you know, can Bush needs to put together the traditional conservatives and the reformist conservatives, I think is the easiest way to put it. I'll never get the New York Times to love him, but he sure can get respectful treatment from a lot of people who weren't crazy about him at first. I think if he just ends up being a creature of kind of corporate republicanism, then he's in deep trouble.
Arianna, who are his voices here?
Well, Chris, you know, I'm actually surprised that Bill Kristol has not been chosen as one of his voices, because this is a very interesting test of the administration. And Bill, I'd love it if you can give us any inside information on this. But here is Mary Matalin, who has been picked as a senior advisor to the administration. And I'm sure that if Bill Kristol had not supported John McCain in the primary, he would have been right up there, because, after all, you don't have many more brilliant conservatives in the media than Bill. And with his experience in previous Republican administrations, he would have been a natural. So, Bill, what's going on? Is it just that you supported McCain?
That's part of it. You've occasionally said one or two nice things about me, and that probably was the final nail in the coffin. I didn't really want to go in. No, I think, look, the Bush people respect loyalty, and I guess I don't criticize them too much for that. But it's also fair to say that to govern this huge country, Reagan was a big man in that respect. Reagan made Jim Baker his chief of staff, who had supported his opponent, George Bush, in the primaries. You can't run a successful administration. Bill Clinton, when he got successful, brought in people whom he was not particularly close to personally, Leon Panetta, many others, who helped him run a reasonably successful administration in many ways. You do need to be big enough to try to have a big umbrella. And I think the problem with Bush is not that he's not ideologically big enough. He does believe in a big Republican Party in that way. I think it's that there's always been a personal element with the Bushes. If you're not with us, you're against us. You've got to be loyal. Too much loyalty is a good thing, but too much focus on loyalty can be a dangerous thing in an administration.
What about the press itself? I mean, in the Kennedy years, the press en masse married the Kennedy interest. In the Reagan years, they learned to be, you know, fed very remotely. I mean, at the end of a stick, really. And Reagan communicated directly with the people. George Bush seems to be almost unapproachable on a sort of intimate policy level. I don't see him personally leaking the way Lyndon Johnson would have, or Bill Clinton, or President Kennedy. Who are the reporters and the columnists that are going to have or feign a kind of inside track on this story?
Well, one of the problems is that he has not engendered much respect at the moment. So, with the exception of the absolute loyalists, you know, the sort of card-carrying Republican members of the press, it's hard to see him at the moment garnering a lot of support among those who follow their own drummer and are more objective. I mean, he has to display some kind of leadership skill, some ability that he has not yet displayed.
Does he have any friends in the press yet? As Roosevelt had many?
I think he has some, but, you know, he's also not been in Washington, so he doesn't know most of the people here, and vice versa. I do agree with Arianna. The press is kind of a lagging indicator, and if you show leadership, as Reagan did against the views of much of the press, still they respect you. And if you show a certain toughness, a certain ability sometimes to do what you're not expected to do, I think Bush, the press will be fine for Bush if he is up to the job. If he's weak, if he's not up to it, then he'll have a negative press. There's always a tendency to blame the press. I've been in government. Believe me, I know how much these guys, you know, you read an article about yourself and you blame the reporter. You don't blame yourself. But the truth is, I think he in this respect, he's kind of master of his own fate. He's not going to, you know, he has a chance to make the case to the American people. I'm sort of struck for all the talk about bitterness. I think people are giving him a chance. I believe he is coming into office, you know, given how close the election was and given that he doesn't have big majorities in either House, given those things, he is coming into office with a real chance to be a success. I don't think the cards are stacked against him, but he's got to do it. You know, it's just a test of him.
Bill Kristol, it's always a pleasure to hear you on The Connection. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Chris.
And let's do it again. Arianna Huffington is with us. Alexander Coburn will be here shortly. We're talking about the W restoration. 1-800-423-8255 makes The Connection. 1-800-423-TALK, or you can join us online at theconnection.org. John is on the line.
Hi. First, I want to commend you. It's an excellent program.
Thank you, John.
I want to make a statement about your and Bill Kristol's comparisons. You compared the current administration to possibly Eisenhower, and he really analogized it more to early Kennedy. And not to be disrespectful, because I think he's right, because even though there's a sort of a delegatory style of management, which clearly is Bush's, and that was also Eisenhower's, I think the times and also the difficulty and the differences of the different issues that Bush is addressing right now are very different. And I don't know if Bill Kristol is still around, but I was hoping he could address a couple of things. One is the prejudice, if you will, of some press like the New York Times against people like Ashcroft. And I thought his commentary telling is, as a Jew looking at it, he said if an Orthodox Jew was vilified, so to speak, or portrayed on the front of the New York Times as that, I mean, it would have brought a tremendous response, as it should. And to a degree, I mean, I'm a moderate independent, but I don't see Ashcroft as the villain, so to speak, because he's been portrayed as a zealous.
John, we touched that point. If it's not Eisenhower and not Kennedy, I mean, make your point again. Where do you put this in your spectrum? John, I'm sorry about the phone. 1-800-423-8255. Kirsten is on the line.
Hi, Chris.
Welcome, Kirsten.
I also am a big admirer of your show. I will say that I think your topic's a little premature today, of proclaiming the return of the Republicans, considering to make the rules better for Democrats and considering the election we just had. But I had a question for Arianna. And I'm very impressed with you as well. I'm usually on the opposite side of you ideologically, and I appreciate your objectivity and your dispassionate response today. I wanted to know what your comment is in case a private company goes in and counts the votes in Florida, and it is determined that in fact Al Gore did win the vote in Florida. What's that going to do to the debate and the tone of the Bush presidency?
Good question.
Well, it is a very good question. I had been in favor of the count happening all across Florida. I was very much opposed to the Supreme Court decision. So I'm looking forward to a real understanding of who won Florida. But I would say that the political establishment, not the country, has closed ranks around W. I disagree with Bill Kristol, who said that the country is basically behind him. I don't think the country is behind him, but Democrats and Republicans who form this country's political establishment have basically put Florida behind them. And so whatever happens, including the mainstream media, incidentally, I don't
mainstream media, no question, but is this temporary? I mean,
no, I find that what's happened is that a lot of the establishment Democrats are more upset at Al Gore than they are at the Republicans or the Supreme Court. I was very surprised at different Democratic gatherings I've been at to see the anger at Al Gore for losing his own state, for not having Clinton campaign for him. So the focus somehow has been taken away from the injustice of what happened in Florida. But underneath this radar screen of the mainstream media and the political establishment, there is real ferment and real dissatisfaction, which I think we will ignore at our peril.
Well, I think you're right. You know, George W. Bush himself is a man almost entirely without irony. This is not a deeply reflective or subtle or very humble guy either. But it seems to me the trick is, and it's not impossible, is to think two things at once. He is the only president we've got. He did make his way through the process, but he didn't really win the election. I think most people sort of can, you know, put their political bifocals on and see both of those truths. And they're going to be in a real tension, maybe through all the 4 years. Don't you suppose?
Yes, I really think so. And especially if there isn't any movement for real electoral reform. I mean, we had all this talk, remember, during the heat of the 36 days about electoral reform. And now we have a bipartisan commission for electoral, for a bipartisan bill for electoral reform put forward by Mitch McConnell, who I think is the human roadblock to any reform, and Bob Torricelli, who's become the fundraiser-in-chief for the Democratic Party. So that doesn't bode well for reform. And if nothing happens in terms of fixing the voting system, fixing the antiquated machines, having the same voting system for poor and rich, white and black, then the resentment will only mount.
1-800-423-8255 makes the Bush Restoration connection, or 1-800-423-TALK. Robert is calling from Lake Placid, New York.
Yes, hi.
Hey, Robert.
Thank you very much. Great program.
Thank you.
Originally, I wanted to talk about what was going to happen, what I thought was going to happen, rescinding all the good things that Clinton did, albeit towards the end. But I'm just wondering now if this sort of committee-type government we're getting into now is just going to, when are they going to start really working, going back on everything that we think the Clinton administration did?
Well, like what?
Well, as far as, like, let's say the three E's, the energy, the environment, and the economy, I think that they have a committee-style situation here that's in lockstep going to pare away everything that we thought the Democrats were really after. We're, in fact, really, they didn't do too much. I think everything was sort of a kind of a cursory token kind of handling of things. But I think now we're going to see almost a kind of a ferocity.
Well, Robert, I like your idea that this government has the feeling of an executive committee.
Yes.
But I don't feel the ferocity yet. Where do you expect it to bite?
I think they're going to be very convincing because look at the economy now and like everybody's feeling about, you know, we're in a dark hole now. We better do something. We better get up to Alaska. We better stop all this kind of silly environmental talk. We better get sober.
Well, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we better get sober. Robert, thank you. Jonathan is on the line from Iowa City, Iowa. Hello, Jonathan.
I'd like to ask the panel about their opinion. I think it was mentioned before in the program about Bush's ability to hold two contradictory ideas in his mind at one time. First of all, with the agenda, clearly the Bush agenda lost the election by 500,000 votes, and still the new administration, Bush in particular, is pushing ahead with the $1.3 trillion tax cut.
Right.
And that lost. And the second thing is, with the outlook on the economy, now they're talking down the economy. It's clear that the projected budget surplus is not going to happen, and they're still going ahead with this tax cut. And I'd just like to know, particularly Ms. Huffington's view on this, this disconnect between
the
reality.
You get it. Jonathan, thank you. And Arianna, we'll talk about it right after the break. We're talking about the Bush restoration. On the Connection from WBUR Boston and NPR. We'll be back after a short break.
From Boston.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the Allaire Corporation, empowering people with innovative internet technology and offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
We're talking about the Bush restoration, the W connection. Richard Reeves, my favorite reporter. Nobody's seen inside retrospectively these White Houses better than you, Dick, in the Kennedy White House and the Nixon book forthcoming. Can you put your head inside a Bush restoration? I wish you were going to be covering it.
I'm glad. I'll cover it a little bit in the column. We'll have the restoration and then the counter-restoration when Hillary comes after the Bushes. If the Bushes can get revenge, maybe the Clintons can too. And I think that's what we'll see in 4 years.
Go ahead.
I think that the old Bush, George H.W., the president, my guess is that is going to be probably about a six-month phase. And then there'll be a confrontation inside the White House.
Or a heart attack.
That could happen too. And it could happen because of this, because I would guess within 6 months there has to be a confrontation between Bush and Cheney over who's president. And that Bush will prevail. And the and then the older folk will be kind of peeled away, and we and perhaps he too will find out who George Bush really is.
I'm not sure he was built to fight for it. I think if Dick Cheney does it all right, I think he might be happy in the private quarters.
There's another thing. He may be, but you know, we'll see what happens when Karen Hughes takes on Mary Madeline. These things are fought out by senior staff, not by the participants themselves. I mean, that's the history of presidential and vice presidential tension.
Dick, I'm puzzled about this man's lack of irony. He has been walking tall since election day as if he won 60-40. He still can't see the irony of taking the oath of office as a man who, you know, by many definitions, lost the election and had it stolen for him fair and square by the ultimate authority of the Supreme Court. Would it destroy him to deal with the fact that this is President Asterisk, and he's got to make the best of that reality?
No, I don't think that will destroy him. I mean, after all, if he probably, when he sits and talks to his wife at night, points out that he was elected with 50% of the vote, and Bill Clinton was elected with 43. So was Richard Nixon, for that matter. So that I don't think there are any questions in his own mind about his legitimacy, and I think mandates are in the eyes of beholders, that he would be judged quite differently if, for instance, there were some sort of emergency, particularly a foreign policy emergency or a major domestic terrorism emergency, and he handled it well. I think that people forget the vote counts after a while. What they may not forget, I was very interested in the way Gore was received this weekend in the Hillary Clinton bash in Madison Square Garden, where for the first time people were cheering Gore more than the Clintons because they felt that, one, he had gotten a raw deal. They were chanting Gore in four. Mm. He had gotten a raw deal, and he had handled it in the end well, although God knows he handled the campaign very badly. So that's an outside threat to Bush's legitimacy. I don't think there's any threat in his own head, and I think his big problems are how he will confront Cheney, because I think it will happen. And the second thing is that if you're in Washington, which is not a very nice place, it's expected here too that within the year the Democrats will control the Senate, that either Strom Thurmond or Jesse Helms will die. Both states, both Carolinas, have Democratic governors, and that there'll be a different political situation a year from now than there is at this moment.
Is there any ideological thread worth falling back on here, Dick Reeves?
I don't think so, because I think there's still an ideological struggle to be fought out. It's hard to believe that George W. Bush or any president, because the president is a national office. He's not representing any group of people. It's hard to believe that a president could be as conservative as the Republican leaders in Congress now are. And so that they're not going to prevail in the long run, because in the end, the White House, however it's structured, and then the opposition, the Democrats, are going to gang up on them. So that I don't think it's going to be. I think that the old kind of Rumsfeld-Cheney conservatism, which was attached to George W.'s father, will be pushed aside or fade away over a little time. And then Bush will have to be create a kind of new kind of non-military moderation.
Arianna, I wonder what you think on the asterisk problem and how he deals with it, or does he just keep bluffing? Can he bluff for 4 years?
Well, I agree with Dick that I don't think that a problem for W himself. I don't think there's any existential angst about how he got there and is he really legitimate. I don't think there's an ounce of Hamlet in him wandering through the night. In terms of the confrontation, though, that Dick was painting, I frankly think that the confrontation is going to be between Bush and McCain, not between Bush and Cheney. I think Bush is kind of relieved to have Cheney as prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
And the real confrontation, I mean, I know we started the show with that, but I want to go back to it because I think it's going to be so key. It's going to be between not just McCain, but the forces of reform that McCain represents, not just within the Republican Party, but within the country. Let's not forget that almost half the eligible voters did not vote in this election. And yet many of them turned out to vote in the primaries for McCain, even though they may have disagreed with him on 90% of his other views. So there is that latent longing to clean up the system. And how Bush is going to deal with that is very critical. And unfortunately, I don't think his team recognizes how critical that is. They really don't think it matters.
Well, it appeals to the same rather short suit he has in irony and humility and seeing the other side of the coin. And he's shown very little inclination that way, to realize that this was the luckiest election. He lucked out. You know, he just kept flipping the coin, and it came up heads his way over and over and over again. Either it was fixed, or he has a huge debt to fate, and I don't see any sense that he recognizes it.
Also, let's not underestimate the fact that he's going to be speaking to the public a lot more. And when he opens his mouth, very unpredictable things come out. I mean, I think the press has given him a sort of free ride since the Supreme Court decision. But, I mean, I have been making notes, and the most staggering for me was during one of the nominating press conferences, he suddenly said, and I had just turned on C-SPAN, and I hear him say, the greatest value in America is, and I expected him to say something like family or children or one of those political platitudes, and instead he says owning something. And there are all these sort of beliefs that he has hidden somewhere in his head that occasionally come out like that. I mean, the idea that owning something is the greatest value in America is so bizarre. that when we start analyzing these things that he's going to be saying over the next 4 years, a very troubling portrait may emerge.
1-800-423-8255 makes the Restoration Connection with Richard Reeves and Arianna Huffington. Tim is on the line.
Good morning.
Morning, Tim.
I wanted to comment on Arianna's comments regarding John McCain. You know, I look back at this election and I look back at the process by which that they tried to get McCain on board with this W situation here, and the fact that he went forward begrudgingly, certainly. You could see it in his voice. You could hear it in his expressions and so on and so forth. I think I agree. I think the ultimate challenge here is, how are they going to appease this guy? I mean, you know, he's a major player in the party, but to try to appease him simultaneously to appease, you know, all of the corporate support that W got in this election, you know, I see this as a major, major battle, and I think ultimately the gridlock that this is going to create for the Republican Party is just, it's going to be insurmountable. It really is.
It's only 2 years to the congressional election.
Well, that's true. But it could be an ugly 2 years for that party because, you know, it's like, you know, as the old saying goes, kind of rob Peter to pay Paul kind of a thing. You know, it's like, how do you do it? How do you balance that?
Richard Reeves, is the fight over the tax cut the thematic adventure of the first congressional term?
No, I don't think it will end up that way, because I think that, you know, we're going to end up with some sort of moderate tax cut that, again, is going to, you know, going to have to come out of the middle, I think, and much more important, whatever happens before there can be a tax cut, if there is a tax cut, I would imagine that people will have a different view of the economy than they have at the moment. In the moment, I think that it didn't. I actually thought that Bush's answer about property owning being the American value was pretty close to the mark. But he has yet, And Ariana sounds like she's going to be one of the first to remind him of it. He hasn't learned yet something that every president has to, and that is the power of their words. You go through life talking, and nobody really listens. Suddenly you become president of the United States, and everybody listens. You say that, as Clinton did, that maybe Haitians are being mistreated and should come to the United States. And the next day, 100,000 people are building boats. Bush is driving down this economy. That's the stupid rhetoric I hear from his on his part. And it seems to me he's very inept on how he would make a tax cut, which he would dearly love to give his supporters, work, because the overwhelming majority of people, which will then be picked up by moderates in politics, if they begin to worry about the economy because of what he's saying, then it's going to be a different country to govern than the one he was elected in.
Right. The economy, stupid, was a Clinton slogan, but it's a bipartisan reality. You make a very interesting point that he is talking it down as if, I mean, how big a recession would he need to get the kind of tax cut he wants is the sort of crazy question here.
We're not going to give up national defense or government services either. If there is, he's going to have a lot of trouble if revenues to the government decrease drastically, the debt starts to go back up. Half the country, somewhere in the middle, is going to be more worried that a tax cut would make it worse.
Hmm. Ariana?
Well, I personally think, and I've been writing about it for a year, that the economy was going down for a while. I think still he should be very careful about what he says about what's happening to the economy, but the indicators were there. And I think one of the gravest problems for him is going to be what's going to happen to the welfare reform cases, who are now going to be off welfare and will not be able to get jobs if the job market tightens. I mean, that's going to be a real test for all the Republican governors and for Bush himself.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Do you want to nominate a thematic person that we ought to keep our eye on, Dick Reeves, as the sort of person who will be seen afterward? I mean, that we haven't mentioned yet.
I think at least none come to my mind, because the one we haven't mentioned yet, because we haven't really met him, is George W. Bush. I mean, he has, whatever his rhetorical problems, he's shown a genius for saying nothing. And we don't really know what this fellow thinks about how the country should be governed. And I agree also that the McCain factor has got to be dealt with. I think it probably will be, and that he may have peaked already, but he still has to be dealt with, particularly by his own party. But I think that the person to watch, because he's the person we know the least about, is George W. Bush.
Richard Reeves' new book is called Richard Nixon, A Man Alone. It'll be out in the fall. Ariana Huffington's book is called How to Overthrow the Government. Thank you both. Thanks to Bill Kristol of the Weekly Standard, who joined us earlier in the hour. Connection listeners, you can continue the Republican restoration conversation on our website at theconnection.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. This is The Connection from WBUR Boston and NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and by the Allaire Corporation.